This week on Vox Talks, what do the paintings that John Maynard Keynes bought tell us about fine art as a financial investment? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. As a bit of a break from COVID-19 reporting that we've been doing for the last few weeks, today I am transporting you back to another time and another place. This is a Vox Talk that I recorded just before the lockdown regulations came into force, which involved what now seems the luxury of a visit to the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge. And that's where we begin. I'm in the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge, and I'm looking at one of the highlights of what is known today as the Keynes Collection. It's a very small impressionist painting, easy to miss, and it's called Still Life with Apples. It was painted by Paul Cézanne around 1877. It's the highlight of the portfolio of fine art that was acquired by John Maynard Keynes over his lifetime, which was given to King's College, Cambridge when he died in 1946. The collection has never been broken up, but some of it is on public display here at the Fitz. Just to my left, there's another Cézanne, it's called Undergrowth, and behind me, there is one of Seurat's studies for La Grande Jatte. A painstaking piece of detective work by David Chambers and Elroy Dimson of the Judge Business School in Cambridge, and Christophe Spangers of HEC Paris, David is also a CEPR fellow, has unearthed what Keynes paid to acquire these paintings, and what the collection may be worth today. Their conclusions invite us to think again about how we value portfolios of art as a financial asset. Now, the Judge School is right across the road from here, so I'm going to see David now.
So David, we know about Keynes as an economist, but probably not much about Keynes the connoisseur of art. Can you tell us about Keynes the collector, how he came to be someone who was a buyer of paintings?
Well, Keynes is also well known as being a member of the Bloomsbury Group, and some of the key members of that group included Roger Fry, who was a very famous art critic and indeed artist, Duncan Grant and Vanessa Bell, who were artists. And it was really the three of them that got Keynes interested in collecting. And in fact, Keynes bought his very first picture on the recommendation of all three of them. This was when he was at the Treasury. He persuaded the then government that they should advance some money to the National Gallery in London, who at the time only owned great masters. They did not own any Impressionist art or post-impressionist art at all. They went to Paris. He went with the director of the National Gallery to the auction of Degas' collection, who died the year before. The auction took place in April of 1918. The guns on the front line were 40 miles away from Paris, and you could hear the guns sounding off as the auction hammer was coming down. You can imagine what that did to prices. But the National Gallery bought some things, and Keynes snaffled one or two pictures for himself, including what his Bloomsbury friends had recommended him to buy, which was Cézanne's Still Life with Apples. And this is the picture across the road from where we're sat in the Fitzwilliam Museum. So that was his very first picture. And he got interested in art, therefore, really because of his friends.
And did he buy on the recommendation of other people, or did he have good taste himself?
It's fair to say he started out by buying on the recommendation of his Bloomsbury friends. And indeed, at certain points, they expressed, to put it mildly, great disappointment in one or two of the pictures that he chose. But I think later on, he did develop his own taste. And in addition to collecting Impressionist and Post-Impressionist pictures, he became a collector of British contemporary artists. And indeed, he became a very important supporter of British artists in the 1920s and 30s.
As you can see, if you go to the Fitzwilliam Museum, you can see that there is quite a large collection that he managed to amass. It's not all there, is it? Some's in King's College as well. And it's fascinating to see it. In your paper, you use it as an example of the value of art as an asset as collected by a high net worth individual. How much of the wealth of the very rich is spent on art these days?
Well, there are these people out there who are called ultra high net worth individuals, the definition for which is anyone who has a wealth greater than $30 million. There are supposed to be about 200,000 of these high net worth individuals in the world, and it's estimated that they have around 4% of their wealth invested in art.
So, and this is quite a large sum, and we hear mostly about paintings these days when they're sold for extraordinary high amounts at auctions. And it makes us think that art always earns a very high return. But indices of art prices, when you take all of the paintings sold at auction, they show that on average, it's been a comparatively low return investment over history, hasn't it? Are these indices a fair reflection of the value of the assets?
They probably are, in as much as we shouldn't expect art overall to generate the same kind of returns as equities. And one reason for that, of course, is that they don't pay a dividend. They pay a dividend of a non-pecuniary kind, which is what we call an aesthetic dividend, i.e. when you bought your picture and you put it up on the wall, then presumably you enjoy it as well as hoping you'll make some money from it. So we shouldn't expect art to do as well as equities. And therefore, in that sense, the indices are pointing in the right direction. Where the art market indices fall down is that there are two particular problems. One is that there is an upward bias to these returns, actually, because there is a tendency for people only to take their pictures to auction to sell if they've done well. I mean, that's not in all cases, but in the majority of cases. So that automatically means that you're transacting the pictures that have done better than the average. And then the other thing is that auctions only cover half the art market. The other half of the market is the private market, where people buy through dealers and through galleries. And that's ignored in all these studies.
So we know that Keynes was specifically interested in his art as an investment, as well as for its aesthetic quality. Did this help you to establish the details when you did your detective work of how he acquired the portfolio, how much he paid, when he bought the pictures?
Yes, indeed. One of the great things about Keynes is that he kept virtually everything. The research we've done on his art collection actually is the latest in a succession of pieces on his investing. We started out looking at his stock investing and his currency trading and also his trading in commodities. And in every case, we were able to do this because he kept the record. So in the case of his art collection, he acquired in total 135 pictures and he kept invoices which precisely dated when he bought the picture, what he paid for it, who he bought it through. All that information in the case of over half of the pictures. The pictures for which we have full data account for 95% plus of the amount that he spent on art. So we've got virtually everything that matters in terms of estimating how the collection did. The other important thing is that we have pictures that he bought not only at auction, but also through dealers or through galleries. And therefore, we're covering not only the auction market, but also the private market.
Which is information that for most portfolios, you just would not be able to get.
So this is the thing. There are virtually no studies. There's only one other study, to our knowledge, which was a study of the Gantz collection. This was an American couple who were big collectors who sold their collection a couple of decades ago. That is the only other collection that we know of where people have even tried to do any kind of detailed research.
But of course, on the other end, none of this collection has ever been sold, has it? So how do you know how much the Keynes collection is worth?
So that's true. Keynes did not actually sell a picture. He did, however, at various times put pictures up for sale. So he did make it known that he was prepared to sell some of his pictures at particular prices. The fact was that no one came forward at his reservation price to meet his reservation price. So how do we know what the collection's worth? Well, first up, there was a probate valuation when he died in 1946. And it's important to point out at this point that he bequeathed the collection to the college. His wife had the use of the collection, but the college became the owner on his death. Because the college then took ownership, they had valuations for insurance purposes done pretty much every decade. And that takes us up to the present. And we more recently had the collection valued by five art experts, which then gave us a pretty good idea of what the collection was worth today.
So the big question, David, what has been the annual return on the Keynes collection?
How did he do?
Yeah.
Well, so for things like this, where we know how much he invested at various points, we treat it the same way that you might treat, for example, a private equity portfolio, a venture capital portfolio, and therefore we can calculate something called an IRR. So the IRR in this case is a bit more than 10% without adjusting for inflation. That's from acquisition up to early 2019. The IRR in real terms is about 6%. He spent £13,000 in pounds of the day. That's what it cost him to assemble the collection. And today it's worth about £76 million. If you simply adjusted for inflation, that £13,000 would only have become £500,000. So that gives you an idea of how well it did. If we compare it to the stretch benchmark, if you like, how did he do against an equivalent investment in equities?
Yes.
So if he'd not bought the pictures on the days that he did, but put equivalent amounts of money into the UK equity market, then he wouldn't quite have done as well, but he would have got fairly close.
That is a very reasonable investment because we've also had the use of the pictures, haven't we?
Indeed. So it turns out to be a collection that has done well. You might therefore ask, how did he do it?
Yes. Is there any special secret to why this one
is
has done
luck
so well?
Or is it skill?
Mm.
You could argue that there is a big slice of luck because at least in terms of the performance and where he put a weight of his money, the Impressionists and the Post-Impressionists carried the returns in large part, choosing this new segment of the market, which came along about the time that he started to collect. On the other hand, you could say, well, it was skill because he did have his friends who were advisors. They did spot an opportunity. They were informed investors, if you like. That's one argument to suggest it was skill. The other thing is what our paper shows when we look at performance in the early period, so i.e. from when he bought to 1959, for example, that's where the majority of the performance is generated. And that seems to indicate, therefore, that he was very good at buying cheaply when these opportunities came along.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that fairly consistently, so that you can put down to, or could also put down to skill.
And what about the concentration of the portfolio? Is most of the gains in a few pictures, or is it fairly well spread?
You're absolutely right. This portfolio, the 10 most expensive pictures, so the 10 pictures he spent the most money on, represented about 80% of the total spend, and that carried on through subsequent valuations. That is fairly typical of other collections. So whilst we can't look at the performance of other collections, we do look at the concentration of some other portfolios in the paper, some well-known portfolios. So this is fairly typical that in art you get heavily concentrated portfolios. In that sense, art is similar to, for example, venture capital. Mm-hmm. A venture capital portfolio would be similarly concentrated. The second thing that follows on from that is that, like venture capital investments, art investments exhibit positive skewness in returns. So in other words, you tend to get relatively few very big winners, and you need to have those winners because if you don't have those, then it won't carry the overall return on the portfolio.
That's interesting because venture capital portfolios are explicitly designed in this way. That's intentional, isn't it? So is this something that tells us a general lesson about the design of portfolios of fine art, collections of fine art, which we don't pick up from just looking at these indices of return?
That's the important point here, is the art market indices, despite the best of intentions, will not be able to capture the experience of the typical art investor in terms of the portfolios they put together. And that's because a couple of things we've already mentioned, that art portfolios tend to be much more concentrated in the overall art market, that positive skewness in returns is going to exhibit itself much more in a portfolio than across the whole art market. And the other important thing is that art, we have to remember, like real estate, is an illiquid market. Sure, there are auction markets, but it doesn't trade every day like equities or other assets that we can invest in. That opens art up to what we call idiosyncratic or transaction-specific risk. So that means on any particular day, if you're going to market to sell your picture, then the price that you ultimately achieve is going to be very much impacted by which buyers turn up on a particular day, because buyers are very heterogeneous. They're just very different. And because of that, therefore, the price at which you transact can vary enormously. And we see a little bit of that in this paper when at the end of our study period, we ask the art experts to value the pictures. Mm. And on a picture-by-picture basis, you do see quite a bit of variation in the valuations that are attached. And that's a little bit indicative of the transaction-specific risk issue.
So whenever we have subject matter experts on Vox Talks, we always like to get a little bit of extra advice for the audience. I'm pretty sure that a large part of the Vox Talks audience has got a very high net worth, David. So I'd like to think so. What can your research teach them, if anything, about buying art?
Well, I think overall what it tells you is that even though Keynes did very well and it looks like he was a smart investor, I don't think we're suggesting for one moment that his experience represents what the average art investor should expect. And so the very first thing I would say is you should invest in art because you also enjoy art. So that aesthetic dividend that you're going to get is really important, just in case your collection doesn't do as well as Keynes. The other things are that it is important in terms of driving the overall portfolio return that you do get a few of these winners. If you're unlucky and you don't get them, then your returns are going to suffer. And the other thing, following on from the illiquid market transaction-specific risk point that we discussed, is that you want to spread your buying or your selling over a period of time so that you're able to minimize the transaction-specific risk factors. And also, you want to think about using several advisors, not just one. That will help you to even out any differences of opinion as to the value of what you're buying or what you're trying to sell.
Good advice, and we'll let you know how our audience gets on. David, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
A reminder that the paper is called Art as an Asset, Evidence from Keynes the Collector, by David Chambers, Elroy Dimson, and Christoph Spangius. And quite apart from the economics, there's a lot of fascinating historical detail about Keynes and how he acquired his art. It's CEPR discussion paper 14357, if that's how you like to pick it up. The paper also now has a publication in the Review of Asset Pricing Studies, and that's a free download. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Don't forget to subscribe, and why not check out our archive at voxeu.org/vox-talks.